Okay, hello. Good morning. I'm very grateful to the organizers for inviting me here. It's my great pleasure to give this talk. It's a joint talk which is still in progress with two other people, with Will Banks from Columbia, Missouri, and Francesca Pappalardi. Unfortunately, they couldn't make it, but at least Francesca is partially here. This t-shirt is his present to me, which is a very nice t-shirt. He says very nice things. You can read it on my back while and things like this, which says, if you look at this picture, and the text at the back says, who said that mathematics doesn't have a heart? what I'm going to describe is a joint project which started a few months ago, where we tried to understand a little bit better what we can say about group structures generated by electric cues. There are two very common beliefs. The first one that we don't really understand what's going on with groups generated by electric cues over Q. We don't even know what happens to the rank. And the second belief is that we know essentially everything we would wish to about group structures of elliptic curves over finite fields. And if A is certainly correct, B may not be so valid. So what do we actually know about group structures of elliptic curves over finite fields? We know that points, of Q rational points, generate a structure which is an abelian group of rank at most 2. It is a cyclic or a product of 2 cyclic groups. So we can always write it like this, that n cross that nk, and then nk is the exponent, the group exponent of the group, and n is responsible for the torsion. So the equation which kind of originated our work was, what can we say about all possible pairs n and k which you can generate this way? So you take all possible prime powers q, you take all possible curves e, and you ask what kind of pairs n and k you can get this way. So we just introduce this set F sub capital pi, which is a set of all pairs n and k which you can obtain this way. And certainly primes are very nice objects, they're special objects. So we also consider the set S sub pi, where we ask the same equation, but only for curves generated over prime fields. So this is basically the two main sets which we try to investigate. Okay, let me summarize what we know about N and K. First of all, of course, you know the Hathaway bound, which tells us that n squared k should belong to the famous Hathaway interval. We also know that n should divide q minus 1, which comes from very simple properties of the wave pairing. If you use these two properties together, you can formulate the following very useful lemma, which says that if Q is a prime power and E is a curve over FQ, such that the group, the point group on E is isomorphic to that N cross that NK, then Q should be of this shape where L belongs to this interval. Just know that L runs through a smaller interval than 2 times square root of Q. It's because we already embedded the factor of N in here, which should divide L. And in fact, these conditions are almost if and only if, but not quite. And this not quite sometimes gives us a lot of headache when we really want to understand the equation in full. Let me also note that when you are given a pair n and k, you can easily test whether it belongs to this set, because of course you have only finitely many possibilities for q, and there are finitely many curves. So for given pair n and k, everything can be tested in finitely many steps. Okay, so what do we actually study? As I said, we study this set S sub pi, or S sub capital pi. And in fact, we expect that these sets are reasonably dense in some sense. However, there are some gaps. For example, there is a list of gaps for pairs NK with NNK up to 25. This exhaustive list of such pairs. So we want to do some counting to see how many elements can we count in the sets where n and k are bounded by, say, capital K, capital N and capital K. And we do it for both sets. Besides, we consider a few other functions which are kind of related to our sets S. We fix N and K and count the number of times we generate this group structure. So we count pairs with multiplicities. So this number is a multiplicity of the pair NK which would appear in our set S sub pi if you include pairs with a multiplicity there. And of course J sub pi is the total of capital N and K is the total multiplicity of all N and K in these ranges. Well, besides, we also want to understand what's the contribution from higher powers of P. Of P. So we introduce set NKM, which is a set of N. N is responsible for the torsion on our curves. So it's a set of possible torsions, which you can find on curves over P to the M of cardinality, which is N squared K. And we compare this set with the set of integers. We just satisfy the conditions of lemma 1. Remember that lemma which we saw on the previous slide. The lemma which says that if we have this structure, then Q is of this shape. And I said it's almost even on leaf, but not quite. So we want to find this gap. You want to understand what this not quite actually means. Our basic tools are two very famous results. One of them gives a full description of possible cardinalities of the set of FQ rational points on elliptic curves. It's a result of Waterhouse, which tells you what happens in different cases. And the simplest case here is the case of m equals 1, when Q is just a prime number. Then the result says that essentially everything may happen there, everything which is not forbidden by some trivial restrictions. If Q is not a prime number, then there are some other cases which should be taken care of. There is one more result which we also use, which may not be so famous as the previous result, but still it's in the literature, which actually describes all possible group structures. And in fact, this result says more or less the same as the previous result. Whatever is not forbidden by the cardinality restrictions and by the wave pairing is possible. So all kind of possible group structures, possible in the sense that they're not obviously forbidden, can be realized on a certain curve over FQ. So we don't really need to know the details of this result because I'm not going to give you any detailed proofs, but it's just to show you what's behind our results. First of all, if we combine these two previous statements, we immediately obtain that the following statement, which says that if we work over prime field, then everything can be realized except that you have to satisfy these two obvious restrictions.
I think the middle condition can be left out.
Middle? P doesn't divide N1.
N1 divides P minus 1, but it's not divided by P.
Yes, it's probably true, yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Then you immediately derive that what we describe in lemma 1, which was kind of an if statement, becomes if and only if for prime numbers. So beyond this point, you can't essentially forget everything about elliptic curves and work with just prime numbers and integers. Well, and here is just a very simple proof. As I said, only if is lemma 1, And if follows from this to simple, follows by using some simple arguments and applying the characterizations of the possible group structures over FP. So you see the proof takes only 5 lines and it's really trivial. Well, now it's time to start some counting, and of course there's no surprise that we use some analytic number theory here. So we introduce this function pi of x ma in both cases, lower and capital, and as usual this pi counts primes up to x in a given arithmetic progression, and this pi counts prime powers in the same arithmetic progression. Using this notation, you can easily describe how many primes generate pairs n and k. The n is up to capital N and k is up to capital K. It was our counting function of total multiplicities. You can express it via this difference of two pi functions. Well, now what's next? Of course, the good news is that we expressed this function via classical number theoretic functions. It's very good. The bad news is that we have to study primes in short arithmetic progressions. If you look at the previous slide, you see that here this expression is dangerously close to this. So when you subtract the arguments, this essentially means that you count primes in arithmetic progressions which are very, very short, which is certainly bad news. And here this gives a quantitative expression of the relations in the modulus and the length. The good news is that we count this on average. And you know that on average we have very powerful tools. For example, we have the Bombieri-Vinogradov theorem. So we have to count primes and arithmetic regressions on average. It's a natural thing to try to apply. Unfortunately, this is not the end of the story, because still there is some bad news. Because the average over square model, the Bombieri-Vinogradov theorem deals with integers from a consecutive interval. Here it's slightly different. However, it's actually not that bad. I don't know what this recall does. Oh, sorry for the typo. The upshot is that Bayer and Zhao have a very nice result, which gives an almost complete generalization of the Bombieri-Vinogradov theorem when you average only over squares. And this is our main tool. So what do they do? Instead of counting pi, then they introduce this function psi, which is very common in this business. And they say that if you average the expectation, the difference between the actual value of psi and the expectation for the value of psi, you average the largest deviation of all squares up to x to the 2 ninths, you obtain this kind of estimate, which is of the same quality as in the Bombieri-Vinogradov theorem. You see that the modulus, which is m squared, runs up to 4 ninths, which is very close to what you would expect from Bombieri-Vinogradov, which is 1 half. So it's a very nice, very strong result, which is varied in a very large range. So are we done? Well, not quite. There are still a few things to do. First of all, we have to switch between psi and pi, but it's essentially trivial. We just use partial summation. A slightly more painful thing is that the limit here is a function of L. So we cannot apply the previous result directly, because in our sum, everything moves. When we average, one of the limits moves as well. It's the bottom point of the interval. So what we do, we separate the whole range into even shorter intervals. In the shorter intervals, this range is almost stable, and we then optimize this parameter delta, which tells us the length of each interval we deal with. And if you do it carefully, you obtain a result in this range, which is a very large range, because M, capital M, is responsible for the torsion, for the square, which is embedded in the number of points. So you work with group structures which are very, very rare, and you're still able to show that you're still able to handle them and obtain some counting results for the group structures. Well, you can use a similar technology, but in a simpler way, to extract some information about the sets S sub pi, set of possible pairs of n and k, which you can generate. The trivial bound, of course, is n times k, and we can't say much more than this at the moment, but later we'll show that at least the inequality is strict, and we even estimate the gap, but you cannot obtain anything better than nk by the order of magnitude here. And the low bound is almost of the same type. We lose only log k. And the range is the same as you could see on the previous slide, because we use the same tools, except that now everything is much simpler, because we just say that this function exceeds this sum of pi's, then we truncate it, and we use n between n over 2, it's another text type on n. We put it in this interval, we just sacrifice small values of n. In this interval, we can pull out also log k, and replace pi with psi, and finally we also sacrifice some values of n and started from n squared k over 4. So it's really very, very simple in this case. Well, now let's consider a few other equations. Assume that capital K is fixed. We want to consider a slice of our set S n k, when k is essentially fixed, and the very n, which is responsible for the torsion. In this case, we deal with prime powers of this type, where k runs up to capital K, but it's fixed. And of course, we are asking for prime powers among values of quadratic polynomials, which of course is out of equation. We can't hope to get any lower bounds here. But sieve method should be able to give us some upper estimates here, and this is indeed the case. The trouble is that we need explicit bounds, because we still want to have an explicit function in terms of k, and we have lots of progressions. We have square root of k progressions, so we have to be very careful with the sieve method you apply. But when k is fixed, you're guaranteed that the result may not be very very strong in terms of k, but at least in some ranges of k, you will get something. And you essentially guaranteed that the Seldon sieve should give you a result of this type. So you have you should be able to prove that for some constant fk, you have this estimate, which immediately implies that the set S of pi has infinitely many misses. So for each k node, there are many misses in the set. In fact, almost all n, for almost all n, nk node is not an element of your set S. The other extreme case is when n is fixed. And in fact, it looks like a simple equation, but it turned out to be a hard equation. Even if everything is linear, now we ask for prime numbers in very short intervals. And even if you have no doubt that the answer is like this, that it contains all, I guess it means pairs, n and k, we are not able to prove it unless we assume something which is very strong. We need an analog of Cramer's conjecture for primes in arithmetic progression, in the fixed arithmetic progression. It's probably easier to prove this for almost all k. We have this inclusion. We assume that it holds for all the finitely many, but we want to prove it for almost all, and we hope that this could be possible.
But if you take K equal 1, isn't that very difficult?
NF6, K is a variable which, yeah. The other case looks harder, but in fact it's easier, even if it's quadratic. One can also ask whether our separation into two sets, S sub pi and S capital pi, made sense. And in fact, yes, there is an non-trivial gap. So you cannot generate all pairs N and K using only primes, which would be a natural thing to expect. After all, primes are very dense, but prime squares, they do not exist for all practical purposes. They do not exist, right? It's a very rare sequence. Nevertheless, there is a non-trivial gap between these sets, and even if K is 1, you can show that there are structures which are generated by squares, which you cannot generate by just primes, which was kind of a surprise. We still have no idea, and we still want to at least find some numerical examples for examples with K at least 2. So far we haven't succeeded, and we just don't know whether the gap between the sets can be obtained with K greater than 1. It's still an interesting Kolb equation. Now, this set, as I said, this is the set of possible torsions which you can get from all possible curves over all possible fields. And this is the set of n's which just satisfy these conditions. So we want to know whether if it really knows anything about elliptic curves to deal with these equations, or you just consider this equation as an analytic number theory equation, and this is the truth. And unfortunately, yes, you have to know something about elliptic curves, because we believe that this inclusion is proper. In fact, it's proper, but only when M is large. For M equals 1, the sets are the same, which is natural. We work with prime numbers, and then we know that almost all our statements were if and only if. So when M is 1, it's indeed it's easy, and these two sets are indeed the same. For M equals 2, the sets are almost always the same, but not just always. There are some exceptions, and this is the list of the values of K for which these two sets are distinct, and we can even show what they contain. What the difference between the sets includes. And if you look at this set, you see that it's a reasonably massive set. It contains P plus 1 over M or P minus 1 over M, but P is taken in this progression. Of course, sometimes they give you the same result, the same prime, namely when P generates a twin prime pair, but we need only an upper bound on this, of course, which is a very easy thing. So we know that the gap is reasonable. It's two times T over log T by the order of magnitude. For M equals 3, the situation is more complicated. We don't really understand it well enough right now. And we still expect that this set and tilde and n are different, but we don't have much to say here. Even if you take k equals 1, so you now fix k and m. Everything is fixed. Even in the case when k is 1, you have to deal with some very hard questions, which, surprisingly enough, again, lead to some equations about elliptic curves, except that now this is an elliptic curve over Q. So we need two conjectures. One of them is a conjecture that these equations have only trivial trivial solutions. So the first one has only one solution, the second also only one, and this has two trivial solutions. Solutions which are obviously right away. Of course, we know that there are only finitely many solutions, but we don't know how to check them all. It's the first conjecture. And the second conjecture is that this elliptic curve also has only this four integer points and nothing else. It's kind of a well-documented curve. We know almost everything we need about this curve, except that we cannot answer this equation, at least not yet. So under these two conjectures, and also under the famous Bateman-Horn conjecture, which predicts the number of prime values among the values of irreducible polynomials, I remind you this is an explicit statement. So assuming this conjecture, we are able to show that if M is even, then the cardinality of this set behaves like this. And this means it will deviate from N tilde. So the cardinality of N tilde is different. And if M is greater than 3 in odd, then it's just an empty set, which of course doesn't apply to the previous set, to the set N tilde, 1M. And in fact, under the conjecture free, we can even get an asymptotic formula for N11 with some constant alpha. We have a Dirichlet product expression for alpha, and we looked through some tables or some famous constants or some textbooks. This doesn't seem to be in the literature, so that's why I didn't present it, because it doesn't really have any particular meaning. So we have some results, but they're all conditional, and we don't really know much about these conjectures to make any convincing arguments. Now, this is a meeting on experimentation in number theory, and I thought it would be very appropriate to conclude it with a quote of Karl Pomerance, which says how careful you should be with your conjectures and with your predictions. So maybe when we just don't see the solutions because they're very sparse, maybe there is something else, and well, so what I just tried to describe today is still work in progress, and I can't say much more than I have already done today, so they're still mainly open questions and conjectures. Okay.